Entrepreneurship on 702.
Andisa Mabunga is Group Chief Advisor at Ntiyiso Consulting. We continue our conversation on some of the characteristics, some of the mindsets of the entrepreneur. Now, we are very, very clear about the fact that not everybody is going to be an entrepreneur, that not everybody is going to necessarily want to be in business, and that it's not everybody's cup of tea. But what we are in agreement about is that perhaps the large conglomerates, government, are not necessarily going to be the providers of jobs. So we need to look to entrepreneurship for people to create jobs, not only create jobs, but also create other forms of income so that our fiscus can become a little healthier. Andisa, thank you so much for joining us this evening. Are you good?
I'm well, Aubrey. And you?
I'm good, my brother. I'm good.
I love the passion you're showing. And
I'm 51 years old.
Young or strong?
Strong.
Both, my brother. Young and strong.
Let me tell you. So on Sunday, I turned 51. And somebody said to me that, yeah, now you're becoming... Oh, it was Chris. Yeah, it was Chris. Yeah. He says, you're becoming a mountain now. No longer a tree. And it's true.
Yes.
Mountains get to a place where they don't care what you think about them. I'm getting to a place where... Oh, I really don't care what people think. I want to tell you the truth. I'm going to tell you the way it is because I'm part of the group that is beginning to come out, to get out of the scene. We need to make sure that what we found, we leave better than what we found it. That's our duty, you and I, the guys that are starting to... leave the age. This. Let's talk a little bit about characteristics of the entrepreneur. The last time we spoke, you spoke about a word that has had me thinking for a long time. The word acumen.
Yeah.
Let's go back to that.
First, Aubrey, happy belated birthday.
Thank you, sir.
And wishing you all the best. Yeah, so we got into a bit of trouble, Aubrey, last week.
You did, I didn't.
Trying to describe these things, and I know of we've had conversations about maybe how do we become more relatable, to people, and I guess this is again an attempt of trying to get there. And it's important to underpin that the characteristics we're talking about. Are for a large an extent my distillation through my journey, right? Yep. We anchor them through my journey. And my journey might be different. I think we started getting into those things last weekend. You reprimanded me of being apologetic around my path to where I've come. But it's to say that I'm not a be it and end all. I think the best I can do to the world is to at least shine a spotlight in the journey that I've been through.
Yeah,
which I find somewhat have been fulfilling because I was the first to at least admit that I'm more privileged than most South Africans in a sense that I've been exposed to quite a lot. I've worked in quite favorable environments, have traveled the world and have met quite some bright people, have ventured into the journey of entrepreneurship. And I guess my... To your 51 years of age, coming back to say, you reach a certain point where you feel you have to at least shine a spotlight on your journey, hoping that even if it's a person or two, can pick up that light and shine it again to the world and make a difference. Because the aim is really that, Aubrey, that you opened it up, is to say that if we can inspire one person or two people, right, we can create enterprises that at least absorb 200 other people. At least for this hour that you and I have spent, it's a worthwhile into the universe, right? Because we would have at least sparked a journey that would create or absorb 400 people, which is, if you were to do the multiplier effect again without being technical, we're talking about families and children of children that we are changing the lives of.
The multiplier effect.
The multiplier effect.
What does that mean?
Yeah, so it's just to say that, remember, if you touch a person, that person has two or three other people that they are touching.
Yeah.
Those other people have other people that they are touching. So it's not worthy of us to belittle ourselves.
Absolutely.
Thinking that we are not impacting
a person. Are you writing it down? Multiplier effect.
We do need to write it down. As uncomfortable as it is, as unpalatable, because some of these things you probably would have heard that we are not popular for this. We were called MBAs, right? Trying to have mental gymnastics around MBA jargons, and the aim is exactly to say that this is not an MBA class, but it's about sparing people to do things. But coming back to Acumen, so I opened up last conversations by saying that ultimately, if we were to argue, what is it that we, as an entrepreneurs, we really paid for, or if you are a captain of industry, what is it that you are paid for? It's less about the hours of work you spend. In fact, it has nothing about the hours of work you spend. And we made an analogy that says if effort and hard work was consumerated, African women in villages would be the richest people. Yeah. So we at least have to appreciate that the universe, although it appreciates that, but it does not applaud it, right? So what are we really being paid for? And I distilled it to say it's about decision making. The better the quality decisions you make, the higher your remuneration becomes, or the higher the value you create. So the function of you making good decisions is the function of Acumen.
So it's important
that
maybe we underscore a principle that might go unnoticed in what you've just said.
Yeah.
You're saying to me that there's a hierarchy in the quality of decisions that are made by a businessman?
Yeah. Remember, at the end of the day, and we've had a lot of conversations around strategy, right?
Yep.
You'll quickly realize that strategy is like almost like playing the lotto, because remember, you're finding a need into the market. You're quite not sure about how big the size is, and we've given you some tools to think about it. But the onus is still on you to bet on that thing that you are seeing on the market and to go after it. So it's almost like playing the lotto. But what we are doing is, or the exercise of strategy is not so much to say we're going to guarantee your success, mm-hmm. but it's to lessen the odds of failure.
Right.
That's what it is. So it comes back to this thing that says the better the quality of decisions you make, the better you're able to navigate and respond to the environment, the better is your strategy, and the higher the value you create. So, and that boils down to acumen, strategic thinking.
So what you're saying to me is that it's not just about decision making. Because, you know, many of us have grown up on a staple diet of being told that, consistent staple diet of being told that, no, business people are decision makers. And you're saying, yes, that's half the truth.
That's half the truth, yeah.
The total story here is, yes, they are decision makers, but of a particular quality.
Quality, yeah. Some decisions are better than others.
Yeah.
That's why the market will remunerate the better quality decisions.
Ah, but you see, that's very, very important. I think that a lot of us aren't aware of that. That we think that it's just about a matter of making decisions.
Yeah.
And sometimes we don't make decisions, not understanding that in itself is a decision too.
Absolutely.
Right?
Absolutely.
So you're saying to me that these decisions are determined by their hierarchy or degree of quality that is brought to bear on a particular decision by that decision, the quality of the decision.
Yeah, you can boil it down to competition. If you think really about competition, what makes the better performers puts better performers from average performers is the decision they take, the markets they decided to go with, what products, or how much investments they need to make, what people they put in there, whether they should go or no go, what type of capital, the business modeling. Remember, we've given you a framework for example, in one of our past conversations around the business model, right?
Yeah.
And we actually even touched on it when we're talking financial statements around, take the simple concept of just buying an oven.
Yes.
Other people can rent it. Other people can buy it off, right? Those are decisions, by the way. Ultimately, whether you determine whether that decision has got higher impact on your value creation is based on the profits that you choose.
Right.
Right. Others would argue that it's better to own an asset and derive its benefit and wind it down. Others would say, oh, okay, but this is not my core business. Maybe let me rent it out and get the same benefit, but with less risk. But again, it's about understanding what really is your differentiator in the market. And those are all issues of strategy. But I'm saying even strategy itself, we've appraised people with the frameworks of getting people to think about stuff. Ultimately, what will make you a winner is the decision that you make on those quality, whether you invest in that oven or not, or whether you expand that store in that region or not, what products you take. Again, the entrepreneur must make those decisions, and the quality decisions will then get remunerated in the market.
The reason why I'm stalling a little bit on that particular score, on that particular issue, is because many of us sometimes get caught up in the idea that all I need is money.
Yeah.
All I need is funding. All I need is somebody to invest in my business and I'm A and away. Or sometimes we say, all I need is access to markets.
Yeah.
Then I'm A and away. And those are important. Funding is important. Markets or access to markets is important. But if the mind of the entrepreneur who is going to be exposed to that funding, the mind of the entrepreneur who's going to be exposed to those markets is not one that has acumen.
Yeah.
Then it means that we don't have an entrepreneur. No. We have, I don't know, a conveyor belt of the movement of money.
Yeah.
And somebody who you're saying to me that the issue here is the quality of your decisions, and your quality of decisions determines how you get remunerated. Absolutely. Or how you get rewarded. And that is what we call business acumen.
Acumen, yeah, absolutely. Ah. In fact, I love this analogy that says two business people go into a field of play. They are selling shoes. One guy goes into the same market and sees people who are not wearing shoes. He says, there's no market for me here because no one is wearing shoes. And other entrepreneur comes in and say, oh, there's a whole huge market here because no one wears shoes.
Right.
Again, you see the type of decision making.
Yeah.
And obviously it's not just about shoes, because there's quite a lot of understanding you'd need to develop around that market. Why are they not wearing shoes? Can I maybe get them to test the wearing of shoes? And again, it's not only about identifying the opportunity, but it's also about how you go about it.
Yes.
In launching those products into those markets. And yeah, it all boils down to acumen. And let me tease you a bit, Aubrey, that says, you know, the thing that says the world is your oyster. And you must think exactly about that in businesses. When you go in business, there are so many decisions, so many possible ways to reaching an outcome. How you determine whether the business will succeed or not, obviously, is a function of the decisions that you make. And those decisions are a function of acumen. And that's why it was quite important. And I liked the conversation, although you called it MBAs. Right? I mean, there was a listener who said, no, but we're not crediting the people. And we said, it's not about crediting people. It's to put this notion of to entrepreneurs that you don't need to reinvent the thinking part, right? They are what we call frameworks. Some of them we'll call them theoretical, but I've applied them in life. Things like critical thinking, right? Because if you were to take critical thinking, although you think it's academic, but really what it says is a couple of things. It says, when you're going to do something or you're making a decision, are you testing those assumptions to say whether do they make sense or not? Test assumptions, right? The other one, it says around it, do you reason with logic? So is 1 + 1 equaling 2? Does that make sense? The third one is around, can I ask people what do they think around this matter? I mean, this is just critical thinking demystified, right? Made simple. But I'm saying you can apply that to any decision you want to make. Things around, if you want to expand your product into a certain market, you can test the assumptions that says, okay, but are these assumptions making sense for this particular market? Can everyone afford this product that I'm launching in there? Can they access it? So tick, tick, tick. Okay, it makes sense. But what is the logic? Are people traveling to town? Where are they concentrating? Is there the place? The logic of me putting a store there. Maybe let me ask people who've been there. I mean, if you're going to go to Africa, by the way, and go compete there, it will be foolish of you not to understand the story of Checkers. For example, the story of Standard Bank, or MTN, the guys who've been to the market and understand the subtle nuances of what it takes to get to the market. So again, I'm saying there are frameworks. We started talking about some of them last week to say there's critical thinking that you can refer to. There is design thinking in if you are wanting to design products and launch them and understand consumer needs and how you respond to them. There's also a typical structured problem solving hypothesis driven. I think we spoke about that. So I guess my point I'm saying is trying to say that it's important for entrepreneurs to understand that there are thinking patterns that are out there. And you, by the way, you can go out and research these things. You can Google critical thinking and you'll get to understand what it is, or design thinking or a hypothesis driven problem solving technique.
Or 1-888-30-702, call us now as we talk about some of the characteristics that an entrepreneur needs to have in order to have a fighting chance. And it's becoming clearer and clearer to me that it's not so much about the resources that you can access with your five senses. And it's not so much about the funding. It's not so much about the market, as critical as those are. It is also about the individual, the animal that is in that jungle. And the question that I'm asking you is, if indeed you have entrepreneurial desires, if you have an entrepreneurial, do you appreciate the fact that there is a particular way of thinking that you've got to adopt as an entrepreneur? Are you able to negotiate your mind, your intellectual faculties to the realities of the space that you function in? Do you see the opportunities, not just the opportunities, but how to negotiate, how to approach the opportunity? Because I think a lot of us, when we have the entrepreneurial conversation, we think, one, it's got to be something that we've got to go and study in terms of, and that is also important, is obviously important. But what this conversation is revealing to me is that it is the understanding of your own natural ways of understanding things. The critical thinking that you're talking about is not something that somebody needs to go to school to go and get.
Absolutely not.
Because a lot of Gokos who are entrepreneurial, who've done amazing things, who have built families, businesses, didn't go to school to go. Yeah. But there's a way by which you tap into that kind of thinking, that way of thinking, of seeing the opportunity in a hot day as the possibility of supplying ice lollies.
Yeah.
Of seeing the opportunity on a cold day as an opportunity to provide heaters or blankets.
Yeah.
In other words, it's a way of thinking about reality that opens up an opportunity, and that is acumen.
Yeah. Yeah.
Give us a call, 011-883-0702. Do you think you've got enough acumen? Do you think that your mind is ready to think strategically about the situation that you're at in order to find opportunities for which you will be remunerated based on the quality of the decisions that you make? Give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. 011-883-0702. But that suggests, when Andy said that, there needs to be a certain irreverence to, and I'm using that word very, very carefully, irreverence. In other words, one of the things that somebody said to me about us as South Africans is that we have been institutionalized in many ways by the idea of school. You know, I go to school for so many years and then I must pass and then move to the next thing.
Yep.
The idea of rites of passage, you know, moving from one place to another, that we are always waiting for some form of rite of passage to give us permission to go to the next thing. And it appears to me that there is a certain irreverence that an entrepreneur has to have about the world, about his or her right to be able to participate in a gainful manner in the world?
Yeah. So it comes to the, so we mentioned the acumen, which is about strategic thinking. I think you're now moving into the other letters of characteristics, right? There's a concept that I like, which I call a trait. It's high degree of personal effectiveness.
Yeah.
And that is a function of three things in my world. If I were to distill it on the entrepreneurs I've read about, the entrepreneurs I've seen, and relating it to my journey. I think what we've spoken about now, there is a sense of belief system that entrepreneurs have, right? And this is other people would call it naive. Others will call it high risk, obviously, because it always lands up in doing things that no one has done. And naturally, people will perceive risk associated because they cannot determine the outcome of that thing. That's why entrepreneurs are always called risky. They say when you end up, if we come sebenzi uzodlani, or if you're selling ice cream in winter, are you mad? You know those things. Yeah. So there's this belief system around the world that entrepreneurs have, and I think we touched it a bit in one of the podcasts. I'll give an example, and these things you can test yourself. You know, there are people, even when they don't have jobs, they'll believe they'll never go hungry.
Yeah,
which is a mindset, right? It's what leads them to creation.
Yeah.
And then I'm now delving into the spiritual element, because I said there's high personal effectiveness, but we'll come back to the high degree of spiritualness, because I believe entrepreneurs must have those things. But maybe let me outline them, the framework, back to that word again.
Yeah.
And it's not to say it's the Bible, but it allows me to at least convey my message in a way that I think it will be relatable. I said you need to have almost four what I would call traits, characteristics. One is acumen. That one is about yourself and your thinking, right? It's very much internal. It allows you to navigate the world and make decisions. I made that decision statement that says strategy is about choice, right?
Yep.
And how you make that choice is a decision.
Yep.
And acumen will determine whether you make the right choice or not. And obviously the quality will play a big part. And then the second one is around what I call a strong sense of direction setting and mobilization. This is the vision, strategy, alignment of people in achieving things through people. And we'll come back to it, because I want to zoom to the point you've made now. And then there's one called a high degree of personal effectiveness. It's something that I struggle as well to put grasp in, but I simplify it by saying it's the sense of belief system you have. Is the skills that you can learn, by the way. Sales skills can be learned. You can learn marketing. You can learn strategy. A lot of the stuff you and I have been doing is more skills that we're imparting to people, but hence we're having this conversation that says what we've told you to date is not enough, because you need to have these other traits.
Yep.
And then the final one is a high degree of spirituality. Let me maybe tease you a bit as well, Aubrey. We said strategy is about value creation. Spirituality is about the being who's the creator. And I'll pack that to say, you cannot divorce value creation from the creator. Someone has to create that, and where you start creating is in this spiritual realm. And I hope at some point in time we'll get an opportunity to delve deep in all of them. But I'd like to then come back to your point around that's irreverence, which is a function of belief, right? Remember what really limits our mindsets. Is the sets of beliefs that you have. And you've mentioned now around this rites of passage, right? We think if we go to school, we'll have a good job, we'll have a good life. And it's not necessarily a bad thing, and it's not necessarily something that we create ourselves, but accept that it's a function of the culture and the environment that we are born in. Now, if you were to change and go to, let's say, East Africa, in fact, maybe East Africa is a better example, West Africa, where education there is not actually, although it in fact, you will find that most educated people in West Africa go to other parts of the world to ply their trade. But the people who survive in those areas are entrepreneurs, because they've got this sense of belief that we can create value ourselves with the little knowledge that we have, and we can grow that value. And you'll see that there's a big community of entrepreneurship in the west of Africa, and that is a consequence of the environment that they're in, and less of the schooling. And so you find a lot of startups there. In fact, I would argue there probably over 75% of people sustaining themselves is through entrepreneurship, whether it subsistence entrepreneurship or entrepreneurship at the large scale that we are talking about. So that belief system is very important. But by the way, I still believe, and this is my personal belief, that you can change your belief system. Mm. So my personal ones, by the way, are one that says there's abundance out there. It's for us to go out and find that abundance. There is I'll never go hungry. It's one of those things. The other thing that says everyone in the world is actually conspiring for me to do well. Yes. Because no one actually enjoys. Take this point, Aubrey. I don't think there's anyone in the world who enjoys seeing a beggar. In fact, beggars irritate us, right? We wish that they go away, and not go away because we don't want them in front of us. But the only way that they cannot be in front of us is if they prosper themselves.
Yes.
So I believe that thing, by the way, that says the everyone in the world is conspiring for a greater good of ourselves. I'll make another analogy that says, if you are giving a speech, for example, I don't know if you've been in an environment where you are listening to someone giving a speech. Do you ever get that thing that says almost like it's holding you back because you want them to do so well so that you can clap?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Because if they do bad in stage, no one will really, the people who are sitting there are not going to be enjoying the show, right?
Sure.
So everyone who's sitting there is wanting you to do so good so that they have the good time. So those are the belief system, I think, and I call them the positive mindset and the function of socialization. And there's ways you can change them, by the way. You can change.
Oh, so that can be changed?
Of course they can. I did say that the beliefs are a function of your environment.
Right.
So the people you associate yourself with, the stories you
imbibe and listen to.
You imbibe and listen to. I mean, if there's, I think it's a clip that's doing the rounds in social media. I think it's TD Jakes who says, "I've never seen a rich gossiper."
He's too busy, man.
People are too busy. Yeah, so if you imbibe in gossip, that's what your world is going to be. But if you imbibe in the world of creation, in the world of possibilities, which is about reading, let me read about how engines work. Let me read about business and what makes business work. Let me read about entrepreneurs. But guess what? Let me find people who are going somewhere and let me immerse myself in those environments. You'll quickly see that that thing quickly. I did say myself, I'm a township child, right?
Sure.
But I think I'm privileged in the sense that where I found myself has become my building block, in the sense that the mentors that I've had, the work environment that I've been in, the business partners, the friends that I've had, are in such a nature that you can't just relax and be mediocre. You want to always reach out and at least assimilate in those environments. So it's as simple as changing your environment, by the way. And when I say changing your environment, I don't mean where you live. It's really about what you read, what you watch on TV, what sort of
who are you having conversations with about what?
Yeah. And again, these things are not compartmentalized, right? Because and I will come back into the spiritual thing, because there's a big part of spirituality is about awareness. Because you need to, if you are sitting in a gossiping environment, you need to have that high level degree of awareness that says, I'm sitting in a space now that's not good enough and I need to change it. And it starts from that element. So Aubrey, I believe those things can be changed. It's a function of you taking that decision to say that, let me change my belief system. If I don't believe in abundance, why don't I believe in abundance? Why is I mean, does it ever bother you in the world that if we were to look at the top four richest people in the world, it's crazy how much they're worth, right? I mean, I was looking at the numbers the other day. I think the first four guys are almost worth $1 trillion in net worth. Four people. I mean, there's no real story of abundance than that. I mean, how much money can these people spend in their lives?
It's also the belief that I can be part of that fraternity.
Yeah.
Whereas I can perhaps incarcerate my own thinking by believing, I wasn't born in the right place. I didn't get this, I didn't do this, I don't have this, this system is against me, therefore I can never be there. That is already a self-sabotaging way of thinking.
Of thinking, yeah.
That might hamper your entrepreneurial journey, yeah?
And it's easy in South Africa, right? I mean, the helplessness that we have now, it's amazing. I mean, that's why the elections are coming up now. You know, I always almost like shroud my when I think of it to say there is so much hope that is pinning on these elections that are coming, right? It's almost as if there's a messiah that's going to come with these elections, and all of a sudden things are going to change. and I guess I call it a coward way of thinking, because you've somewhat liberated or
handed over your power,
the accountability
to a moment,
to a moment. Yeah. Except if we were to say, look, these elections, okay, maybe they might open up possibilities. Ah. That's not what I'm not saying. By the way, I'm saying there's possibilities that are coming out of this election, either way that the outcome, irrespective of the outcome. When I say outcome, meaning that whoever wins comes with them a set of new ways of doing things or old ways of continuing to do things, right?
Let me invite our listeners here. And I know that many of you are waiting for me to ask you a question to respond to and then, of course, follow on the basis of that. That's how it usually works here, that I ask a question and then somebody calls in to try and engage with the question that I'm asking. But I want you to call in and answer the unasked question.
I know we get lost in these things. I know I can get carried away with passion, and we've not even touched on spirituality with entrepreneurship, right?
Give me a call and answer the unasked question. Because I think that's what entrepreneurship is.
Yep.
I think entrepreneurship is looking at the world and formulating a question. In other words, the challenge or the problem that you are going to solve.
Yeah.
Because the world isn't going to come to you with packaged questions that you can then go and get a degree for and answer them on the basis of that degree.
Yeah.
The world doesn't work that way. In fact, somebody, a great friend of the show, I think it's Bonga, last week said to me, and I hope Bonga calls in, because he listens to us quite a lot. He said, you know, the problem is that the conditions aren't conducive for entrepreneurship. In other words, we don't have access to funding. We don't have access to markets and blah, 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 blah. And I said, but those are the ideal conditions for entrepreneurship. The more problematic the situation is, the riper it is for entrepreneurship.
Yeah.
And it goes back to, what is your level of acumen and what is your level of irreverence for the idea that we can't solve this problem?
Yeah.
Because it sounds to me like what you're saying is that you've got to be almost rebellious against the idea that the world is the world is full of scarcity.
Yep.
You've got to be rebellious against that idea. Your mindset has got to be set up in such a way that you militate against the idea that you can't make it. You've got to fight against the idea that says the problem is insoluble. You've got to because you have a mindset and a belief system that says, I can create the solution for this problem. So I'm asking you, 011-883-0702, what is the unasked question for you? What is the unasked question for you? Because give me a call. I'd love to hear from you. 011-883-0702. We're looking at the characteristics of the entrepreneur. I know that many people are probably going to say, oh, these guys are saying we don't need funding. In fact, I'm having a conversation in the next hour about how SMEs can be funded. And I know that you and I have been talking about how we can speak to various organizations that are going to help people understand how to be fundable. Because your story about how scarce money is for you is not enough.
Mm.
People who fund don't fund you on the basis of the fact that you don't have money.
No.
No, no. I wouldn't fund you. But they fund you on the basis of the fact that you say, I need money and I'm going to create more value for the money that you give me.
Yeah.
And that is a particular way of thinking.
Yeah.
That understands that there is abundance, not scarcity.
Yeah.
So if you give me your money, I will increase the value of that money. And both you and I are going to share in that value. Yeah. Yeah?
So you've hit it in the head, Aubrey. So you get two type of funders, and we've done this conversation, right?
Yeah.
You get the banks who would not fund you if you don't have anything, because the banks are not about taking risks. They want to see that you've got assets and you can securitize that loan in the event that you are unable to pay, right? So those type of funders are not the type of funders that would obviously fund you to the market. But think about an investor who's investing you, where they are not looking to, they are actually taking a bet on your business. They are not actually giving you the money because it's okay. There's largely part of the entrepreneur, because they do back the entrepreneur. But it's largely about the idea and that you've sold it to them. They are able to see that if I put in this money here, which is 1 rand, I'll be able to get it back as 5 rand. And I believe with this idea that is presented, and this person, by the way, who exhibits all these characteristics we are talking about, actually can make it happen. That's what they fund you for.
So we've got to find a way of being able to communicate these characteristics to the funder then.
In fact, you need to almost exhibit them. You know, your belief system comes across when you are defending your idea. By the way, people can tell whether you believe in this idea or not, right? They can ask you a couple of questions and you'll be able to ascertain whether that person believes. And I can tell you how they tell the difference is the element of clarity you have.
Yes.
on your idea.
Yes, yes.
The element of clarity, the more
wishy-washy your idea is, the more they know that you don't really believe in your idea.
Yeah.
But the more clear you are, more precise you are, the more unambiguous you are, the more they understand that you have a high level of believability as far as that idea is concerned.
And it's not about knowing everything, by the way.
Sure.
I don't know how often have you come across when you've asked someone a question and they look at you and think and say, actually, I don't know. But they say it with such clarity.
Yeah.
That you actually believe to say, okay.
He'll find out.
He'll find out.
Yeah.
He'll find out.
Yeah.
So it's, and again, it's elements of confidence, right? And I argue that confidence comes when you are very clear about what you are, because you stop being wishy-washy. You are asked a question directly and you are able to answer a question or at least venture an opinion, because obviously with business, it's always assumption. I always say we live in a world of what I call the minimum viable product. I've been in business now for so long, and I can tell you without fear or favor, Aubrey, that my value proposition, I'm always refining it every single day. Still doing somewhat the same thing, but better, right? What I know today is much, much better than what I knew probably 3 months ago. Much, much better than what I knew.
But it's more refined.
It's much more refined. It's much more focused. Sometimes it's not really around changing the product itself, but it's about finding the real need, where the real need is, the real market for it, to say, but who has really the fundamental requirement for what I'm selling? Maybe I don't need to be going to those guys, but maybe these guys.
You know, the conversation about refinement.
Yeah.
I'm going to refer to a friend of mine that I live with. He likes HMSN. Yeah, every time he talks about HMSN, he always makes this gesture with his fingers to say, no, I like a little bit of HMSN. And he always talks about refinement. And you've just hit an idea. He says, Masango, you know, when I go home in the rurals, I enjoy to drink ihleza.
Yeah.
Abanye, they call it imbamba. Sorghum beer. He says, I've had the opportunity to move to other places where I enjoy more refined imbamba or ihleza. And I like the Irish imbamba. He calls it Jameson.
Yeah.
Both these things are beverages that have got alcohol content. But the one is more refined than the other. ihleza twala besintu is yet not as refined perhaps as that which is distilled in the very sophisticated labs. You are saying that your value proposition must go through the evolution of being refined from ihleza to the very highly refined form of alcoholic breath. But it's more expensive by the time it gets to the level where it is a Jameson. And therefore, people seek after it more than perhaps the other.
And I'm even arguing that process never stops.
Yeah.
You never get to a point whereby you think, okay, I've got it, I know it. And therefore, this is it. No. So, and this is one notion we need to desist from entrepreneurs. I know there's this temptation that I need to know everything. I need to have it covered. I need to have this. We must be comfortable in the process of creation. We must be comfortable in ambiguity. We must be honest. We must leave the product as we believe, or the service as we believe it is, and go to the world with what we believe is, and be open to ideas. And it's fine if you don't know. It's fine to say, can I use this for that? And to say, I never thought about that. That's interesting. You know what? I'll gladly work with you to see if we can test it out there. It's a much, much better solution rather than saying, yes, it works there, only to find out it doesn't work there.
What I'm hearing you say is that as your value proposition becomes more refined, so are you being more refined.
Yeah, absolutely.
As you allow yourself and surrender yourself to the process of humble discovery, so do you become that
become
much
better at it.
Refined
much better at it. Yeah.
How do people get in touch with you? By the way, Gift says, I'm loving this conversation. Unfortunately, is Andisa on Twitter? Somebody asking, and somebody says, unfortunately, Orbs, I can't ask the question that you are asking me to ask. That's our goal. Our goal is to find the question for the answer that we already have. You are that answer. Talk to me. How do people find you?
Yeah, so you can find me at info@ntisoconsulting.co.za. Or alternatively on www.ntisoconsulting.co.za, and that's our business website.
Group Chief Advisor at Ntiso Consulting, Andisa Ramavunga.